Welcome to Primary Sources. I'm your host, Fred Sossman. Economic growth, financial markets, labor and employment, and housing are among the topics in the most recent issue of the Appalachian Highlands Economic Update, a quarterly publication of the Department of Economics and Finance in the College of Business and Technology at East Tennessee State University. The update builds on the success of last year's inaugural Appalachian Highlands Economic Forum.
We had a huge success with that. Around 300, 400 local business leaders showed up to our economic forum.
Dr. William Traynor is our guest on Primary Sources. He is director of the Center for the Study of Finance, professor of finance, and holder of the John H. Poteet Chair of Banking at East Tennessee State University. Dr. Traynor was one of the organizers of the inaugural Appalachian Highlands Economic Forum last year.
So that was kind of, you know, a real big success. So we thought we should probably outreach to the local business community a little bit more, especially bringing the information from this particular area, as opposed to most people look up information maybe from Nashville, Knoxville. We kind of have a very separate region out here. And so the idea was to put a newsletter out discussing kind of the housing, the economic conditions, the business conditions, the employment conditions in the local area.
That idea turned into the Appalachian Highlands Economic Update, a critical analysis on the regional and state economy.
One of the issues the update deals with, of course, is the cost of housing in this area. What has been the trend over the past 10 years or so in the cost of residential construction in our region?
That's probably been the biggest drag for future growth in this area. In the last 8 years, housing prices, believe it or not, have doubled. Where we were once approximately 60% of the national average, especially in Johnson City, we're now around 90%, even 95% at times. Kingsport is still a little bit lower in the 85% range. But one of the issues with that, of course, is the median income around here is approximately two-thirds of the national average, which is fine when our housing was two-thirds of the national average. But now we have reached home prices that are equivalent to even some of the suburbs in Atlanta, making it unaffordable for many of the local residents in the current area. And on top of that, when, of course, home prices go up, your commercial prices go up, rents go up, so it's been a real difficulty for everyone involved. Just to kind of give you an idea of the listings, it used to be over 1,000. We are still, even post-COVID, in the 300 to 400 range. So listings have been cut in half and have not recovered, unlike the national average. So that also is causing some issues as well. I don't know when that's going to let up. Obviously, the whole COVID issue, we probably got backlogged in construction. A lot of people have noticed, and unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, it's good for economic growth. But we've been in the Wall Street Journal's, I believe, top 10 places for 2-3 years in a row now, which, of course, draws in a lot of residents from other states, California, Texas, New York. I believe California and Texas are 1 and 2 for residents coming into the area, where you'd think mostly it'd be, you know, local in terms of North Carolina, Virginia, and they're further down the list. And a lot of them, and just kind of point of the fact, I've had several friends and neighbors that said the homes next to them or across from them or even from them if they were moving themselves were bought sight unseen from out-of-state residents. So that doesn't bode well for any decline in home prices.
What if you are a young person living in this area and looking to become a first-time homeowner? What are the options now? Just wait and see, or what do you do?
Well, now it's kind of a double-edged sword. You're getting cut from both sides. One, home prices haven't fallen. Two, of course, due to the inflation issues, prices in general are up 20% in the last 4 years. Home prices obviously are up a lot further. So the double-edged sword, of course, is being that the Federal Reserve, of course, has raised interest rates as well, and home prices have not fallen. Usually that kind of stimulates demand a little bit. That hasn't stimulated demand, hasn't increased supply, of course, at all, because we're still backlogged. And so now, rather than paying $1,200 to $1,300 for a typical house, which is now about $100,000 more, you're paying over $2,000 a month. Just to give, for most, an idea of how your monthly payment would change, basically every tenth of a point, that's 0.1%, an interest rate change, you can expect about a $25 change in your monthly payment. roughly, you know, if you're buying a $300,000, $350,000 house, I think the median right now is 360. Approximately $25 for every tenth of a point. And since we've gone from 3% to 6.5%, you're looking at 30 points or more. So you're looking anywhere from $750 to $800 more per month.
What does the update tell us about employment levels currently in the region?
Employment levels are good. Employment is still below 4%. So that's good. There's been a really slow growth on the absolute employment, around 2% a year. After COVID, we had a real reduction kind of in the participation rate, which has taken a long time. We're actually just back to the participation rate pre-COVID. But for several years, even after COVID kind of disappeared, a lot of people weren't coming back to work. That seems to no longer be the case. So it seems to be plenty of jobs available, workforce slowly growing. So I don't see any issues on the employment front per se, which is kind of good. I think there's going to be the drag, of course, again, is going to be on housing supply. You can only bring so many people in the area, and if you don't have room for them, voila, that kind of is going to slow down your employment growth as well.
I know your college in particular here at ETSU is interested in offering more programs to train people for the hospitality industry. Is that the hot area for us right now?
There's two big areas that are hot, and we're actually taking care of both of those. We actually are just now starting a hospitality and tourist degree that will be starting in the fall, believe it or not. So apt question. And the other one is the supply chain. That's a new degree that's come out just a couple years ago. That's a huge demand. We're also working on a fine tech degree, kind of merging the computer science and the financial side, because, you know, everyone doesn't. I'll give you a great example. I asked my class how many students have used a check, which you think, or even know how to write a check. No hands. So the whole industry on how you buy things is changing, which is where kind of fine tech comes in. So we're working on that. So we are trying to keep up with the economy. We're doing much better now, I think, about being a little more flexible about getting the degrees and the classes that are needed for our students to do well. On the hospitality front, just kind of an interesting fact, of the employment over the next 10 years, 25% of that is actually expected to be in the hospitality and tourist industry.
For the average citizen, whoever that person may be, what is the value of this recent update and its contents?
For the probably average person, just kind of gives you an idea of how the economy is doing. I think it would be more valuable for kind of the business side, depending on whether you're trying to expand or thinking about expansion. Just a kind of another critical point in terms of how the local economy is doing. Our sales tax receipts are down about 10%. That kind of generally indicates how much people are spending. So that's not necessarily a good sign towards our economy, at least locally. But I don't expect any recession anytime soon. I think the Fed has mostly caught this right, although time will tell. So I don't see any issues there. Again, I think probably the bigger issue here is our growth in population. And, of course, a lot of these out-of-towners are coming post-retirement, so to speak. So I don't think the increase in the population necessarily will increase the employment availability. And so I think that's why we're seeing such a slow growth in our employment of 1% to 2% a year. Again, time will tell, but unless we fix the housing issue, all else is going to be constrained by that.
What does it take to put together an update or a study of this nature? I assume lots of hands from your college are involved.
There are lots of little hands. It's not as bad as it appears. Some of these figures are easier to update than others. I generally do the financial markets, and of course I could update that every single day if I really wanted to. But we've got it all online now, so we got, you know, it's very nice in terms of reading. It literally would take you 4 or 5 minutes to go through each section, so we don't have a big newsletter. Most of the sections are maybe 2 paragraphs long at most. We kind of just like to highlight kind of the major points. So it's, to the extent you like finance and economics, it's almost fun reading, and the visuals I think are pretty good too. We put most of that on a graph, so even if you don't like to read, you can see at least what's going on in our economy in terms of the housing, the economy, sales tax receipts, etc.
What is your take on the record levels that the Dow and the NASDAQ have hit recently?
Well, I tell people there's about a 95% chance that you can buy into the market lower than you can today. If you want to try to buy into the market 5% lower than today, that falls to around 60%. If you want to buy in 10% lower the day, There's only a 30% chance of that. And the problem is when you miss that and the market continues to go up, generally the market, so it never goes back down. So the day may very well be the day that you could never get into the market at a lower price. The market goes up 25-30% when you never get kind of new lows. And what I also tell people is, yeah, the market's probably going to fall 20% at some point. But does it fall 20% after it's already gone up 40% that you currently miss? So even, I guess the only negative there is if you get in, of course, today and then it falls 20%. But more has been missed trying to avoid a loss than can possibly made than who have actually timed the market right.
Yeah, in other I've done words, it. Don't time the market.
Right. I've done it once correctly, but I've lost a ton of money trying to do it correctly again.
Of course, there has been talk in national media for months about the whole recession question. I know you deal with that in the update to a certain extent. Tell me about those predictions.
A lot of that's based on current GDP growth, unemployment, and interest rates. The fact that they have to keep interest rates higher for longer doesn't bode well for the recession issue. Most people have kind of discounted the recession almost completely at this point. And the longer they have to keep those interest rates at an elevated level, of course, as we've mentioned before, that kind of feeds into business borrowing, the housing market, and everything else, the more likely you're going to slow down the economy more than you want to. My guess is we won't have a recession this year, and I don't like to say the Federal Reserve plays politics, but it is an election year. A recession in a election year would never be good for those currently in power, so I don't necessarily see that happening. But at the same token, with these very high rates, the expected just interest on our debt is expected to be well over $1 trillion shortly, within the next 3 or 4 months, I think, as all this debt comes due. Keep in mind, we only collect $4 to $5 trillion in tax receipts. So before, where the interest on our debt was maybe 2 or 3% of our tax receipts, it's going to be up to 20% of our tax receipts, which means now you have 20% less money. All you can do is borrow more, which you're kind of currently doing, which is why the deficits, of course, this is what you add on. This isn't the debt. The debt being around $33 trillion, the deficits of $1 to $2 trillion, that's not what we owe. That's just the additional amount we're going to owe after they, again, spend more than we receive. I think that's where most of the deficits are going to start occurring, is going to be trying to just cover the interest. So the programs and the expenditures, those are going to remain the same. That additional, those additional $1 trillion deficits, now they're expecting even $2 trillion at times. Most 100% of that is probably going to be interest.
If people want to read the full update that your college recently completed, where does one find it?
I would just Google economic update ETSU. That's what I usually do for me to find it. It is off the economics and finance website as well, but in case you can't remember that, just look at the economic update ETSU and Google within the first three searches. There will be a link there.
Our guest has been Dr. William Traynor from the College of Business and Technology at East Tennessee State University. For Primary Sources, I'm Fred Sausman.